Хөрхөн охид trap сонсон trap сонсон trap сонсон trap сонсон trap донсон trap донсон trap донсон Түүний сонсон хөгжим дур булаа Таадас тоотан дур булаа мууруулаа
What's up, people? Adam Hunter here, giving you a special podcast today because of Rockfin, /Adam Hunter. Endorse me, spread the word, tell everyone how great it is because I'm giving you, what, 3, 4, 5 podcasts a week, and I love it. I love it, I love it, I love it. I want to thank Speedweed, our sponsor. Marijuana is legal in California. Don't go to the dispensary. Those places, they're great, but, you know, there's cops waiting for you. They're like, hey, try this one, that one. You get high, you get pulled over, now you got a DUI. You got things to do. People, life is short, all right? And you get pizza delivered. You get, Chinese food delivered. Get marijuana delivered right to your house, okay? Or your apartment or your place of work or wherever you are. They will deliver it right to you. Go to speedweed.com, mention Roasted. You get $10 off, $100 or more. I was on Twitter today, and the newest outrage is there's a comic named Dinah Hashem. I don't really know her, but she's pretty funny. She did a set on Comedy Central, and it was a joke about the rapper Extension having $50,000 on him to buy a car, and then he got shot and robbed. And then she thought that would be a great Venmo commercial. It was a good joke. I just butchered it, but it was a good joke. And now she's getting death threats. And a comic named James Davis, who I know, got very offended and wanted her to get her show canceled. And people are like, they pulled it from Comedy Central, but only made her set like 1,000 times bigger because it was everywhere. And people were just butchering her with, you know, F you and don't mess with Extension and a rapper. And at first she kind of doubled down, saying the guy was a wife beater, or he beat up his pregnant girlfriend, and he was arrested, and all this kinds of stuff, which, look, if that's true, that's terrible that someone did that, and she's talked about her own family having some kind of abuse, and it became a big mess. Okay, here are my thoughts on this. As a comedian, I will always defend comedians for jokes, okay, even if it's the worst joke I've ever heard in my life, which that was a good joke that she made. It's a joke. It was meant to make you laugh. That was the whole intent, okay? Whether you like it or not, it was a joke. It meant to elicit laughter, okay? I don't get offended by jokes. Sometimes I don't like jokes, but if I don't like a joke, I don't laugh. No reason to, like, try to get this girl fired or pulled or whatever or death threats. Come on. It was a joke, okay? And you getting offended by the joke. And the joke wasn't even about the rapper. It was about Venmo. It was a Venmo joke. So just look at the context behind it. And even if it was about the rapper, it was still a joke, all right? People tell me offensive jokes all the time, and sometimes I don't like them. If they're, like, super racist, I'm like, I don't really laugh. I'm like, not my kind of joke. But I don't get offended because I know the intent, which was to make me laugh, all right? So there's my opinion on it. Don't get this girl fired. Don't get... And you know what? Now that I know who she is, I actually want to hear more jokes about this woman. I think she was from, like, I now know about her. I'm on the West Coast. She's on the East Coast. I don't really know much. I've never really interacted with her, but there's a whole crop of new funny comics coming up, and I guess she's one of them. And good for her. People are defending her and saying she's a brilliant joke writer. Cool. Cool. And, you know, good for her for making it to Comedy Central, which is not hard. I mean, not easy. Not easy. And so... That's my opinion on that. What else? So by the time this podcast comes out, the fights will be over. The fights are tonight. The UFC fights, which are supposed to be pretty good. Rafael Dos Anjos versus Leon Edwards. Who am I picking for that fight? It's a tough one. Tough one, tough one. I got to go with... I mean, Rafael looks so good against Kevin Lee, but Kevin Lee gassed. Kevin Lee's, you know, who's now training over at TriStar, which is good. I think a new look would be good. I think Dewey Cooper and those guys over at Extreme were good for Kevin Lee, but he wasn't maximizing his potential. He was fading in fights. He was kind of quitting in some ways, and I mean, his body was quitting. I'm not sure he was mentally quitting, and good. You know, he thinks that training with GSP would be good for him. Who has training with GSP not been good for him? And there's monsters over at TriStar, and if anyone can help you out, it's Faraz Zahabi. I mean, Faraz Zahabi, the only person that it doesn't seem to be working for is the dude that lost to the guy from Team Alpha Male, Mirsad Bektik, who seems to be better over at American Top Team, but also has just gotten unlucky. I mean, that fight he had against remembering, but I can't remember people's names, and now I'm not remembering them. But the fight that he had against the Damage, Darren Elkins, I was at that fight. He was destroying Darren Elkins. I mean, so that fight could have been stopped in the first or second, and people would not have complained. And then Elkins just came back from nowhere. And I felt bad for Elkins with that Ryan Hall fight because, I mean, Ryan Hall has like two weapons. His jiu-jitsu is like the greatest weapon, and now kicks. It's like you're almost like we're watching Ryan Hall become a complete fighter. And he even landed a punch, but man, that guy's a hard guy to fight. He's a hard guy to fight. I think that if you're so good at two things, eventually you'll get someone who's extremely well-rounded and will beat you, but so far that's not been the case. And Ryan Hall is just is a strange bird, but he's so dangerous, especially with his damn heel hooks and everything else. But I thought what's his name was going to win that fight, Elkins. I still think if Elkins fought in like unlimited rounds, there are certain guys that just run out of rounds. Like if Darren Elkins fought anyone in like how like old school boxing was, he'd win every fight. Mitch Clark is another guy. I mean, they're not going to win like the 3-round fights some of the times, but if it was like 300 rounds and it was a fight to like whoever falls down first and whoever can't fight, I would say Elkins. He's one of my top 10 guys that Diego Sanchez runs out of rounds. There are certain guys out there that are just so damn tough and you can't finish them. And they're going to win the fight if it goes 100 rounds. Masvidal, I mean, when was the last time that guy got finished? The last time he got finished was against Toby Amato, which people forget how great that. If you want to, some of you new guys that are new into MMA, you want to see one of the coolest submissions of all time. I remember, look at the Toby Amato fight versus Darren Elkins. This fight, versus against Masvidal. I mean, Masvidal, this guy was lighting Amato up. I mean, he was just beating the shit out of him, almost to the point where it was like, it looked like a boy versus a man. And I'm not talking about an Arapigo boy, like a 7-year-old boy versus a grown man. And then he picked him up and he did some kind of inverted reverse triangle when he was up in the air and tapped Masvidal out. And it was insane. But Joey Varner, who's a good friend of mine, great friend, he's got a beautiful wife who's now pregnant, and Joey's a great guy. He's also a really tough guy as well. But Joey Varner told me that the way that Masvidal was looking before he got stopped, this guy is going to be the next champion. And, you know, he was off by like 6 or 7 years, but look at Masvidal. I mean, it's funny how like sometimes you could see a guy lose a fight, but just know that they're going to be amazing in the future. Kevin Lee was like that. When Kevin Lee first fought, his first fight against Ally Aquinta, you knew there was something special about him. Same goes for Dustin Poirier versus Max Holloway. Holloway, you were like, even though he lost that fight, you're like, this guy's going to be good. Brock Lesnar, I remember when Brock lost to Frank Mir in that first one where he just got lost in a minute and a half. Rampage Jackson said to Dana White, that guy's going to be champ one day. And people are saying that about Pico, still about Aaron Pico. They're saying this guy's going to be champ. So just because a guy loses, sometimes it's not necessarily the loss. It's how good he looked in the loss, that if this dude stays on, you know, stays healthy, out of bad relationships, gets his money right, doesn't stay away from drugs. There's a lot of different things. You know, I mean, there are plenty of fighters out there. I mean, a guy who's fighting in bare knuckle boxing coming up is Melvin Gallard against Isaac Valley Flag, which is, I can't wait to watch that fight on a different note, but Melvin Gallard's a guy that if he just would have stayed, you know, center, if he just would have actually, you know, he seemed to have a lot of, you know, off off out of the octagon distractions, whether it be cocaine or partying or this or that. And, you know, it's not just about how you look in the cage. I mean, everybody knows a guy from high school that could have made pro if he would have. I mean, how many guys out there? How many guys on my wrestling team in high school and in middle school and high school that were like, man, if that guy just would have stayed. I mean, just from coaching wrestling, I'll tell you, I've been coaching for, I don't know, 13 years. And there's always those kids in middle school that you're like, man, this kid could be a state champion. This kid could be a Division I All-American. This kid could be, and then most of the time, those kids don't do it. A lot of times because they have other things going on, whether it's, you know, other sports, whether it's football or track or baseball or something else where maybe it's a little easier than wrestling. It's less time consuming. It's more fun. It's, you know, whatever it is. But then there are the kids that, like, just love the sport. That, you know, they're like 1 to 10. They're about sixes in seventh grade. Maybe in the seventh grade, they're sevens or eights. I was like that. I was never the most talented wrestler. I wasn't the most talented at anything. Okay, but I just loved it. Same with comedy. I was in comedy. I took comedy classes, a bunch of them, when I first started, which are good and bad. That's a whole other thing. It's good because you're around people that suck as bad as you, and you can develop a community and friends and yada yada. And then, you know, you're not alone. But it's bad because if you think you're going to become a comic in 3 months after taking a class, you're just, it's like saying I'm going to make the UFC after 3 months of like training. It's just not going to happen, you know? So that being said, it's not the person with the most talent or the person with the most natural talent or the person that most, you know, it's the person that stays in there, person that shows up. That's almost all of it. All of it is showing up is most of it. And I told the kid, there was a kid, I was coaching wrestling one day. This kid, one of my favorite kids, he was crying. He got into a fight with his dad, and they're really close. But he was having a rough day, and he didn't want to be there. And I kind of got, you know, I'm the coach, and I could tell the kid was not having a good day. And I told him, I said, hey, man, look, these are the days that are going to make you the champion. You know, it's not the days where you're feeling good and you can beat everybody and you're feeling healthy and you're well rested and then you can just go out there and dominate. Those are not the days that make you the champion. No way. It's the days you don't want to be there. Same with comedy. Anyone can, not anyone, but there are a lot of comics that can have great sets when it's a hot crowd. You could take an average comic and he could look like George Carlin out there when the crowd's high based on crowd response. Obviously not based on material and stuff, but then it's when you don't want to be there. Maybe your girlfriend dumped you, or maybe your dog died, or maybe you're just in a bad mood, or you're sick, or you're jet lag, and you drove, and your car broke down, and your rent is due, and all that kind of shit. Times that you don't want to be there. You don't feel good. Your voice isn't well. And then when you have to be funny, and you have a good set, and you pull it off, that's when you're on your way to becoming a good comic. That's when you're on your way. It's when you don't want to be there and you perform and you make yourself perform. That's when you're a pro. Okay? Anyone could be good when the crowd's hot. It's when life sucks and you step up to the challenge and you come across and it's good. That's when you know you're on your way. That's what separates the men from the boys, or the women from the girls. Why is it always the men from the boys, right? It should be the women from the girls, too. Now, look, I may not know that much about politics or science or whatever, but, you know, when it comes to the human condition, when it comes to powering through, that's when I know some stuff, okay? I know some stuff about getting punched in the face. Literally and figuratively. Mostly figuratively, but okay. I've been beaten down. But I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. So, I know people are like, when's your Netflix special? And when's your this? And when's your that? Just know, people, that I'm not going anywhere. And once people realize you're not going anywhere, that's when they give you stuff. Because they're like, you know what? We're going to have to deal with this person. And a lot of times when you finally do make it to the masses, I'd rather be overprepared and have too much stuff than be underprepared, because I've seen it. I've seen people not be able to rise up and they fall apart. How many times have you seen that? Remember Michael Grant? Okay, Michael Grant, the boxer. Remember him? I remember him. Okay, he was like 30-0. And they put him up against Lennox Lewis. And Lennox just fucking tore him up in, what, two rounds? Three rounds? He wasn't ready. Okay? I think he beat Galata in a fight, and Galata quit. And Galata should have won that fight, but he quit. All right? You don't want to be Michael Grant. No offense, Matt Grant. Probably doing very well right now, but you don't want to be that guy. You want to be Bernard Hopkins. You want to be the guy that they should have given the title to or the thing, and he was just ready. He was ready when he fought Felix Trinidad. He was the underdog, but he'd been there, and he embarrassed him. He was ready when he fought Kelly Pavlik, all right? You want to be Bernard Hopkins. You want to be the guy they should have given it to before, or the guy that's ready and prepared. That's who you want to be. Not Michael Grant, all right? So that's my little speech for today. We got Stefan Bonner on the show. And thank you guys so much. And keep listening to MMA Roasted.
Stefan Bonner, one of the best fighters ever. How are you, man?
Oh, I'm awesome, man. Thanks for that intro, man. Fuck.
It's true. So
you hear that, everyone?
What was that?
Go ahead.
The last time I saw you was in Las Vegas. We were in Las Vegas together. I had a great time hanging with you, but you also, I saw you do pro wrestling against Kenny Lester, who actually knew. And you killed
happened,
it. You were great.
Happened to be an Arizona State guy. Was a freshman when Bader was a senior. Small world.
Yeah.
Yeah, and dropped the big, what do you think of my new finish? The Macho Man elbow drop.
I loved it. So you're like, hey, I'm having a pro wrestling match. So I show up. It's on Fremont Street outside. Like anyone can sort of just watch. And it was so entertaining. It started at 11:30 at night. You went on at like, I think 12:30 it started. It was real late.
Yeah, really late.
You had a great match. And you did an off the top rope Macho Man. But then you broke your elbow?
No, I whacked my wrist. You know, I elbowed the right elbow, but my left arm was hanging out. And the first thing to smack the ground, to smack the canvas was my left wrist. But ain't no thing. It's about I fucked myself up pro wrestling. It's been really, really mild so far. Like, I haven't even been sore after a match. So, yeah, I was due. And Macho Man's dead, so I could steal his move. No one could say anything.
Now, it seems like you're a natural fit. I mean, you look great. You're huge. Do you want to be, like, in the WWE one day or the TNA?
Oh, God, no. Maybe TNA a little bit, but it's like, what's your motivation? What's your reason? Why are you doing it? You know, If I was doing it because I wanted to be more famous and wanted to have more random people coming up and taking pictures of me, then I'd like try to make it my life and make it my mission to get in the WWE. But it's a good hobby. You realize, I don't want to like rag on WWE, but man, most of those guys are fucking miserable, run ragged. They don't make as much money as you think they do. They don't get their travel expenses covered. You know, I'd fucking be broke right there. And it's their life, you know. I got a gym open now. I got my Monday through Thursday pretty packed up here. Real water, the gym, you know, and weekends open for pro wrestling. It's the perfect plan. And the reason I'm doing pro wrestling is because it gives me that feeling of just being completely free, going in there and creating a fight scene, breaking a sweat, getting high on fucking adrenaline, which is like my favorite drug. And it's not so serious, you know. I could do it the next day. Like that, the match you saw, I had a match earlier that night at FSW. That was the show that Frank Mir and Tom Lawler was on, Kevin Cross and me. And that was actually a terrible match, my worst match ever. But I didn't even have time to focus on, you know, like the shitty match. I immediately suck it up and go right to Fremont Street and make up for it with a good match.
Well, I was proud of you, man. I was really proud of you because it was cool seeing you in there, and like it seemed like you were having fun.
Yeah, and I'm proud of you too for landing that menage back in the day.
I afterwards we talked about threesomes and girls and porn stars and.
Oh yes.
Now you've come a long way, man. Because a couple months ago, you know, well, first I had you do stand-up comedy. The first time you did comedy, you kind of blew the lights, and then you beat up a heckler in the green room.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, come on. I gave him a little wrist lock throw.
Yeah, of course. The guy had it coming to him. The guy put his hands on you, and then he told you that you sucked, and then did Steven Seagal wrist lock him and said, "Who's
yeah?" It was completely legal what I did. I actually said, "Hey, you know," he insulted me. Said I sucked, and I'm like, "Okay, just gotta deal with guys like this if I'm gonna try the stand up thing." So, you know, just thanked him for his honesty and walked off. But then once he followed me and grabbed my back of my shoulder and started repeating it, then it was like, hey, right? Legally, once someone puts their hands on you, you could remove it.
It's over. But your eyes, wow. I was worried because your eyes, your pupils look a little bit bigger than normal. Like, you look like somebody, like, remember in Naked Gun when Reggie Jackson's like, I must kill the queen?
Ah, yes.
You sort of had that, like, that
yeah,
thing.
I was actually, I thought OJ was a little scarier in that movie.
But then,
that was all nice, OJ.
Of course, yeah, right. But then, a couple weeks later, we saw what happened. You got the DUI at, like, noon or something, and it was in rough.
It was like 2 p.m., yeah.
You were in rough shape. And then I saw you again, and you had an ankle bracelet on, and we had, like, a long heart-to-heart. And I was concerned about you. But seeing you last week, you're doing stand-up comedy, you're wrestling, and you opened up your own gym, and you seem genuinely happier and in a better place, man. So I was really happy for you.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, man, but maybe it's that CBD concoction I've been on for a while. Because, like, right after I retired, plus coming to grips with, like, you know, just ending one chapter of your life, and then for a while after I retired, my brain was really fucked up, like, you know? I just could not sleep more than, like, an hour or two. And after, like, 12 months of that, you go a little crazy. And it's just like the solution was when I woke up at fucking 2 a.m. every day. It's no big deal if it happens once a week. But after months of it, it's just easier to fucking slug a little liquor and lay back down. And then it runs a little more and a little more. And then all of a sudden, you know, the drinking gets out of control and you get in trouble. And I just felt like, yeah, I wasn't sleeping right. I just couldn't control the alcohol. I couldn't believe it. I never had a drinking problem in my life. Here I am, almost 40 years old. I'm getting all this trouble drinking. I can't control it. Can't control my impulses. Can't sleep more than 2 hours. And I don't know if it's just because my brain healed from being retired. And then I've been on that CBD for a while now, but now it's like I'm sleeping through the night. I don't even feel like it. I was thinking about that the other day. Just like the thought of, like, guzzling down some liquor. Yuck. I don't know. It's weird.
I've
been saying this a long time, too, and I think part of the problem was just having a purpose, you know, and I kind of felt lost. And, you know, and then it made it easier to drink and yeah, lately, man, it's just ever since, I hate to say this, but Breezy, that girl I was seeing, ended up, like, committing suicide. And that really messed me up. But at the same time, it just, after that, it was like something changed in me where really haven't thought about drinking. It hasn't been a problem. It hasn't really been an issue. Before, I was going to meetings like every morning, and it was like I still wanted. There was a part of me that wanted to, but that part of me kind of died.
Well, that's great, man, because you have a lot to give, and you're a very you're one of those guys that it's just fun to be around you, man. Like, I have fun just hanging with you. So, I mean, even those stories you were telling me that when you ended up getting into a fight and you ended up
Iceland.
Like, when you were in Iceland, like, what was that? What happened in Iceland? You broke your hand?
Yeah, I was out with my best friend since kindergarten, who is another guy. He's been off the liquor for a while because he is just a notorious troublemaker when he drinks. And sure enough, we're out, and we were at the bar dancing with some girls. And, like, the guy, you know, was trying to claim those girls and flex his nuts and started some stuff with his friends. And the bouncer saw him. It was like, you know, like, you guys all got to go. I remember saying, what are you, an idiot? These guys are saying they're going to kick the shit out of us. Like, why would you just throw us out altogether? I think the guy wanted to see us get his ass kicked, the bouncer. Oh, well, so he threw those all out together. And my best friend, being the drunk state he was, didn't really want to fight. So he thought if he just took me down just out of the blue and started fighting with me, it would freak those guys out and they wouldn't want to fight us. So he started doing that. And then the guys just sat in there and watched us. And then I kind of pushed them all. We got back up and they still wanted to beat our ass.
Wow.
He started fighting with the one. The other guy came at me. I landed a beautiful spinning back kick. And like right when I did, another guy grabbed me and I instantly like had him in a rear naked choke and put him out. And then I turn and the guy that Scully was had like, you know, the collar tied up with these like a hockey fight slugging each other. And then I went behind, I grabbed him and I put him in a choke too. And we were kind of on a hill. So I'm pulling over the hill and it was, you know, and now I'm thinking about it, reminding me kind of a pitcher's mound because on the way there in the plane, I had this little portable DVD player, and I had Chuck Liddell's, like, all knockouts, you know, like Chuck Liddell's greatest hits I kept watching. I'm like, man, I'm going to start throwing my right hand like that. I was just so, like, just motivated to start bombing on guys like Chuck. And then that flashed through my head. While I was choking that third guy, instead of just choking him out, I had to let him go, and then he turned around, and I was on the pitcher's mound. I threw like a cross between a Chuck Liddell right hand and a Roger Clemens fastball. And the next thing you know, I'm waking up. This ain't my bed. Oh, that's right. I'm on vacation. Holy shit, I'm in a jail cell.
Wow.
Shit, there's blood all over my shirt. Oh, my God, my hand's obviously broken. Cop comes up. Hey, you're up. You want to give a statement? I'm like, not just yet, sir. Yes, my friend will have to help me with piece this knife back together first. So, turned out the guy I hit happened to be a notorious troublemaker. This is 2006. I'm about to fight James Irvin in a month, right? And, like, fuck, you know, like, I got to pull out of the fight. So, you know, anyways, socialist country being what it is, I'm going to leave out the story of the menage, all right?
Go on.
So we'll just talk about court. So socialist country that it is, instead of like my friends had to go back like the next day pretty much. But court wasn't until Wednesday. So instead of keeping me in jail, they put me up at the Radisson and gave me a per diem. Like, wow. And then I went to court and they really didn't have any witnesses because the one guy was getting like, you know, surgery on his broken orbital, and the other guy was unconscious, and yeah, he really didn't. And so, and the guy happened to be like a notorious, he had a reputation for starting shit with tourists, harassing tourists, and like chocking girls. So, I went up there and delivered an Oscar-worthy performance, and they let me off with probation. I got a huge hospital bill for the guy's surgery, and I wasn't allowed back to Iceland for 10 years. That was
wow.
2006.
Did anybody
so I could go back now.
Did anybody
but no one recognized
you?
Me. No. Nobody. No one
wow.
Googled me or anything. It was right before cell phones had all the, you know, like social media was big and perfect timing. Because nowadays if that happened, I'd be so dead. It'd be a big deal. Oh, so then I come back to America. I have a layover in Boston. I cut my cast off because, you know, I got a fight coming up. No one can know my hand's broken. And I run into who at Boston Airport, of all people? Fucking
who?
Chuck Liddell.
Ah.
Yeah, the guy who inspired the knockout. And then he put his hand out, and he gave me the firmest grip of a handshake that hurt so bad, but I just had a smile. And then I ended up going back to Chicago, went to the boxing gym, right, got my sweat on, and then I go into the ER, get my x-ray. Oh, my God, Dana, I broke my hand boxing today. I got to pull out the fight. Here's my x-ray. And then Joe Rogan, like, Bonner can't fight in the main event tonight. That'll be postponed to the next Ultimate Fight Night. He broke his hand training. Here's the x-ray. You showed the x-ray.
Wow. So
and it
TV.
Was all a lie.
Now, were you laughing when you saw the x-ray on TV?
There was a part of me that admired myself, my deviousness. I won't lie.
Now, what did you do before you were fighting? What kind of jobs did you do?
Really, I started, like, you know, I got my black belt, Taekwondo, Hapkido, when I was, like, what, in freshman high school or something. I was wrestling. So from a young age, once you get your black belt, you teach, you know, the lower ranks. And then when I got to college, I started training people. And then right out of college, you know, I got a job right downtown, a block away from the Carlson Gracie gym at another gym training people. And that's what I did until I got on the Ultimate Fighter.
Wow.
I'm getting back, you know, full circle. Here it is.
Yeah, now you're training again. Do you like training people?
Yeah. Yes. I actually do. I forgot how much I loved it. It became a job, and then I became really old, and I began to hate going to the gym. Like, you know, I'd be in so much pain. I knew I was, that slow down, lost the step, my reactions, my strength was, you know, and it wasn't as enjoyable as it was when you're young and getting better and improving. Or even when you're strong in your mid-30s and you're a horse, you know, it's just not as much fun at the end. And I was beginning to hate it. Now I'm going back in there and I don't have to go through this shit. I don't have to be the one pushing myself till I throw up in the bucket because I got a fight coming up. You know, I go in there and coach and share my knowledge. And it's a whole different experience. And I'm really loving being at the gym. Yeah.
Now, what I have to ask you, when you fought Anderson Silva, you were pretty much black at that point. Why were you so tan?
Oh man, yeah. I had been in Florida for a couple weeks. I was training with Batista, but I was like weekends we'd just go to the beach or go fishing or go on a boat. And that was actually when I got the call to fight Anderson. We were way off the southern coast of Florida we were doing some lobster fishing. We did some dives and poached some lobsters, and I got the call. Boom. Want you to fight Anderson in 3 weeks. Fuck yeah.
Now, why did Batista pick you to train with?
Well, Rafferty's buddies with him down there in Florida, and he's wanting to do an MMA fight. Rafferty's like, oh, Bonner's the hawk, so he'll be a good training partner, you know? Why don't you get him down here and help you get ready for this MMA fight? So I went down there a few weeks. And I had been on the shelf, too. He's a big, strong guy. And so before I went down there for a month is when I was like, man, I got to get some strength back. I've been on the shelf, you know, like didn't plan on fighting again. I was working for the UFC. So I did like a cycle for a month, you know. And before I left, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to take this with me. I'll just leave it, you know. I went down there and trained him for a couple of weeks. And then I got the call to fight Anderson. I did the math and it had like a 4-week detection window. I'm like, oh, my God, how perfect. Like, I just happened to get my strength back. I did 2 weeks of MMA training. I bent off the juice. It's going to be out of my system. And I'll be able to at least give them a competitive fight. Hadn't I, like, did that, I would have been really weak and out of shape. And, like, I wouldn't even have taken the fight because I knew I would have had no chance. And I'm not like that, you know? I can't just go in there and lay down. So it's not in me. So I thought, oh, my God, it's going to be, even if I don't win, I'll give them a Rocky Balboa type fight. And I went in there and I ate his fucking counter right hand and, oh my God, this was nothing. I'm like, oh my God, he's not going to be able to knock me out. This is awesome. And I got really excited and then he freaking lay, like, and I didn't, at the time when he punched me, take into account that he knees like a fucking mule, and he delivered just some powerful knee to the solar plexus that made me go fetal. You have no choice, you know?
So you were tired, so you did a cycle because you're like, I'm training Batista. Yeah, weighs about 80 pounds.
And I didn't have to worry about getting tested anyway. I had taken a job with the UFC, like, had, you know, Forrest ended up doing, you know? And he was like, he just got hurt. He was going to, like, start working for him. I was all excited. Oh, my God, me and Forrest could do so much stuff together, you know? I really wasn't doing anything anyway. I was just, you know, every once in a while they'd send me on a little job and I'd get a paycheck and it was freaking so easy. You know, I had it made and I was doing TV work. And I should have just said, no, you want to fight Anderson? Like, no, but I had been going around pissing and moaning to give me like a fucking, you know, a big name. Like, I just really wanted like 4-star Rampage. Like, one of those fights I could really make entertaining. Who cares if I win or lose? I'll just fucking, like the first Forrest fight. Like, it was so good because, like, I was kind of just – I really didn't care if I went or lost. My plan was just go in there and put a barn burner of a fight on. And I think that showed, you know. I think when you're really attached to the outcome, is, you know, it's like the fans could tell that. And I think that's part of the reason that fight went over, you know. Like, it was just – it was really, like, inspiring just to, you know, see someone just like, you know, if I really cared about winning, I would try to get a takedown in the third or something like that. But not to say I didn't care. I just, like, watched my last couple fights in the UFC. It was all about getting a win so I could have a winning streak so I could parlay that into a big kind of fight, like another fight with Flores or Rampage, where I could just go nuts and it really wasn't about winning or losing. And I'd make it entertaining. That was, like, what I was petitioning for with Dana. So didn't work out. Didn't want to give me that. And it was like, you know what? You fucking did enough. Why don't you just take a job with us? And it was like, yeah, all right. Fine, you know? And, you know, then they got in that jam where the co-main event and the main event, I think Aldo was on that card and someone else. And they were going to scrap the card. And then they called me. And it was like, if you're a real company man, like in my mind, this is what I thought, you'll step up. You know, you'll step up and you'll fight your fucking... And it's, oh, my God, it's the biggest name you could ever think of. It's a win-win, the Michael Jordan of the sport. All I got to go in there is fight my freaking ass off. And I'm going to be doing motivational speeches after this about being awesome.
And you also landed some big punches against them.
Yeah, I was really tight, though, you know? Like, yeah, I was, you see, I wasn't loose. My punches weren't really... I mean, I was tired. I was nervous, man. But I hit on the shelf and, you know, fighting with Michael Jordan in the sport in his backyard on a couple of weeks' notice. So, yeah, I was a little tight.
I mean, but when you saw him take your punch, were you like, shit, this guy can take my punch?
No. No. I was trying to say it to myself. Like, let's get loose and get in a rhythm. You know, like, you're a little tight. Like, I knew I was. And he even said, too, in the clinch, you could feel, you heard of my breathing that I was tense. He was right.
Oh, what did he say to you?
No, it was just in the post-fight press conference. Dana said something like that. Like, he said, I'm like, what did he say? He's like, oh, he said something about, like, when you were in clinch, you could tell with your breathing that you were tense. And he said, you know what? He's smart, because I was.
So then you fly back on a private jet with Dana, right?
Yes. Didn't even get to enjoy Rio immediately after the fight. I'm thinking I at least get to the next day. It's like, no. Get your fucking bags. Like, there'll be a car
waiting. You got a couple $100,000 for that fight, right? I mean, you must have made a big, big paycheck for that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't complain. But, like, in the end, it wasn't worth, like, you know, being, now it's like I'm finally coming around to it. But, like, it was real devastating. Like, I really, like, fell in love with the UFC when I saw it in, like, 94 for the first time. And, you know, just done martial arts and wrestling my whole life. And I just started off doing it as a hobby. Never thought I'd be in the UFC. And then I ended up not only being in it, but I had the fight that kind of saved the company. And I have a guaranteed tenure with them. And this is, like, the greatest thing I could ever ask for. Like, the UFC is the coolest thing that ever existed, you know? And then I go into, I have it, I'm all done, I'm finally out of this shit. I don't have to get in there and fucking sacrifice myself anymore. I got a cushy job. And then, you know, I get called up and think, man, if I'm really a company guy, I'll step up and do this one. And it's also like, how can I say no? I just been going around asking for a big name, asking, all of a sudden, boom, here it is. What, are you going to say no now? Fucking, wait, that doesn't make sense. So, like... Yeah, now looking back on it, of course. No, I wish I would have just been a pussy. No way, I'm not fighting him. Okay, get your job back and paycheck and health insurance, and your wife still loves you. Great.
But, oh, I mean, was there a party that wanted to tell Dana, hey, listen, I took a cycle. I don't know if I'm going to test clean?
Yes. Yeah, I did. But at the same time, like, Wayne, who got me the fight, was, you know, he's a real piece of work, and he was all like, you know, because he was trying to get me another fight with Forrest because I had a 3-fight winning streak, like a big fight, and he wasn't able to. And he just couldn't get anywhere but Dana. And then he's like, finally, here it is, bud, I got you. Dude, go take this fight. Trust me, you go take this fight, and I'll get you. It wasn't like, my show money was $37,000, so it wasn't like, I wasn't really guaranteed a lot of money, but he was saying, hey, you take this fight, and I'll make sure after the fight, I'll fucking... hit up, make sure Dana fucking rewards you for doing this. So I went in the fight not knowing that I'd get a bonus, you know. I was just trusting Wayne, but it was at the same time, like, I'm not good at saying no. And he goes, I got it, buddy, I got it for you. We're going to get paid. This is going to be it. This is all you've been asking for. And, like, part of me is like, oh, fuck, no, I'm happy now. I don't want to. And the other part's like, oh, God, like, you know, kind of hypocrite am I? Oh, they won't give me that big fight. Damn it, damn it, damn it. Here it is. And then I don't want it. Like, oh, I feel like a pussy. So, yeah, moral of the story is just go ahead and feel like a pussy and keep your job.
Well, like, so when you find out that you get popped, I mean, is your wife mad at you?
Oh my God, are you kidding me? She's in labor. Her water breaks. We're in the hospital, and the fucking news comes out. Oh my God, it's like the happiest time of my life. At the same time, like just the worst thing that could have possibly came of it, like, happened. Like, no. Like, Ray went, oh, you're the boy, and he put a picture up, and people are calling you a cheater and this and that. And then, you know, like, man, like, yeah. That pretty much did me in with the whole, you know, marriage thing. And after that.
Yeah, but, I mean, give me a break. You weren't taking it to fight Anderson Silva. You were taking it to train with Batista.
Yeah, no one believes you. Everyone knows you're a liar, you're juicing, you know you're a cheater. No one believes you.
You had what? I mean, I'm looking at your record right now.
But the 20
fights that never got caught with anything.
I think the magic of it now is that both Anderson and John have been popped a couple of times. So, like, you know, I'm a slow white guy, medium athleticism, and they're on it too, and I'm the cheater? Like, man, both his brothers are standouts in the NFL. Like, he's the greatest fighter to ever grow, you know, greater than Anderson Silva, the Michael Jordan, and I'm the cheater, yeah.
That's ridiculous. When you fought Mark Coleman, how strong was Mark Coleman?
Yeah, he was incredibly strong. He was like, he's just so solid. It was like his double leg was just being like run over by a bulldozer. It wasn't like, I had him in a crucifix. I give the guy the single so I could fish a crucifix. And I destroy guys. So I beat him up the whole first round from there, but I couldn't break his grip. He had an iso grip, and it was like his hands were cemented, and I'm popping my hips as hard as they could. And I break everyone's grip. It's my hips against their hands, you know? It's not a fair match. And I couldn't fucking budge that guy. Yeah, so he was so solid. Just so, like, that's what I said. Like, you know, the double leg, just like, brr, like a, you got one over.
That was one of my favorite UFCs, UFC 100. You were on such a great card. It was like Brock Lesnar and
Frank Mir, right? Yeah.
Where did you watch that fight?
Right out. I came out. I just fought Coleman. Me and Hendo were sharing the locker room. He fought Bisping. I come back. He comes back to the locker room, and I was watching it. But there's no sound on the TV back there. But after the first round, I could see him. They're showing Henderson on the stool, and Henderson's actually talking and saying something. Instead, usually it's the corner shouting instructions at the fighter. And Henderson kept saying something to his corner. So I went, when he came back, I go, Dan, what were you saying to your corner after the first round? He goes, oh, I kept telling him, like, he hits like a bitch. Watch this. I'm going to knock him out. He hits like a bitch.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. But where did you watch the Brock Lesnar Mir fight?
So, yeah, then I went right back out in the stands, you know? Yeah, it was the main event. So I just sat, like, in one of the first rows there by the cage. Yeah, and I watched it. Watched it out of the dressing room among the fans. Freshly off a fight, too.
Now,
I usually don't do that, you know. I usually stay in the locker room, but I wanted to be out there, and then it was awesome. Brock Lesnar, you know, the shit he said after the fight was just great. He was spewing in the camera and, like, said he's going to bang his wife and drink a Coors, his Budweiser won't spill. Remember? That was some good stuff.
Yeah, that was one of the best. Now, after the Ultimate Fighter, I mean, you're a good-looking guy, but you're, like, you know, fan mail and numbers and girls. It must have been crazy, right? Like, just women throwing themselves at you?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't not like a rock show, but it, like, you know, wasn't bad. Especially, like, you know, like, from where you come from. Like, I mean, no one ever does that. Everyone's got to put in some work.
Yeah, of course.
But it's so funny. I'm the kind of guy, though, that like, if I actually like her, I'm totally going to shoot myself in the foot, you know? Like, yeah, when I care and I go for it, like, I totally fuck it up every time, you know? So.
Wow, what do you do? Like, what are some of the things that you would say?
I don't know. It's just, I think it's true in all life. Like, the more you kind of try and obsess about something, the more impossible it becomes.
But you also have,
you know,
like,
just noticed
very awkward energies. Like, I can see that, like, you, like, just saying something that you think is funny, and it's just going to, like, really...
Oh, yeah.
Really
habitually crossing the line of decency.
Like,
then again, that is a new...
Like,
it is a new...
You know, like first time.
Yeah, exactly.
What did
but
you say?
It, like, I said, oh, yeah, like, this place is just like the Playboy Mansion. If I could just drink my way past the C-section scars and stretch marks. Oh, man, that was a bad one. And then I did a titty therapy joke that was, you know, about, you know, the strip club. I'm getting more benefit out of coming to the strip club and pouring my heart out in the freaking private room to a stripper than I am going to court-ordered anger management from, you know, a battery charge.
Right.
So that might be a whole bit on that. And then I kind of want him back a little bit, you know.
Well, it seems like you're a really nice guy and you're not a dirtbag, but just because, like, your line of work, you end up, like, taking these weird jobs where you're, like, at a crypto strip club where they get paid in crypto, or you're, like, at the lingerie fighting league doing announcing. You always end up in these, like, strange situations.
Yeah, well, man, I get stale if I stay in one place. And honestly, the indie wrestling world's awesome. I could go to, like, you know how many cities I've been to that I never would have went to and met people and hung out? And it's great, man. I had never even been to Montreal. I did a show up there. It was a great time. Great group of guys. Same thing, like, Tacoma, Washington. So I'm getting all these chances. I did a match with South Carolina. I just did some seminars in Columbia. But that's what I need to do. Like I said, like, I was getting in all that trouble drinking that, partially, mostly, you know, for the brain damage, for one, and then it had to heal itself. I know that for sure. But also because of the purpose, you know? I didn't feel like I was aligned with my purpose at all. And this totally does. You know, I have my Monday and Thursday nights in full here with the gym and the job, and then the weekend's open to get the hell out of here and not stay stale and go nuts and see the world and you know, interact and meet people. And true, am I going to go out there and make money for someone to help them out? I'd much rather be a middle-class guy who's trying to pay his mortgage than fucking feeding Dana White or Vince McMahon's fucking fat pockets somewhere so they could get another private jet, you know? Like,
yeah.
Think about the good thing I did with the fight with Forrest. It really blew MMA up across the whole world, and from what I hear, save the UFC and this and that. But at the same time, it made them a monopoly and it crushed a lot of the competition. On my Instagram, Kyle Whitehart has a great post last year when I cornered him in glory, how he said that. K1 and the UFC were neck and neck. They were both pretty much underground. Unless you were a hardcore sport, you really didn't know either one. But I was always a Muay Thai guy. I loved kickboxing K1. That was my thing. You know, I tried to wrestle a little in high school. I hated it. I didn't like it. I loved Muay Thai. But after that Bonner Griffin fight, K1 just died. And next thing you know, the UFC blew up. All my coaches are like, you got to do MMA. You got to do MMA. You got to train your wrestling. You got and he did. He actually fought in Bellator and knocked the guy out. And he did a decent MMA career, but he hated it. He was forced into it partially because of me, you know? And I just feel with the pro wrestling, if just doing it like – my motives for doing it, to kind of be free to see the world, to help middle-class people by myself. Yeah. I forgot my point, dude.
I like it. I love it. You know, I mean, you are like you're the blue-collar fighter. You're the guy that, like, I'm a blue-collar comic. I mean, I you a lot.
People think I'm, like, missing out on that. I'm like, do you understand? Like, those WWE guys, they have the same night 300 times a year. They have no freedom. They don't get to say what they want. Like, they get their life is the hotel, the airport, and the inside of the arena with the same fucking people. That would drive me nuts, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
so, like, I go to a city, and this place is cool. I'm going to stay a couple more days, you know? I could do that. And it's great, you know? And I don't care if I'm any more famous or not, you know?
No, I've hung out with you. I mean, people come out. You'll be sitting there, and people, like, they love you. They come, oh, thank you. You know, can I take a picture. You say yes to everybody. But you're right, you know?
It's yeah, fine. That too, man. Like, when people come up to me, they usually, like, just start laughing. They look at me and laugh. And say, like, they love me. It's weird, you know? Like, I've been with a lot of their fighters. They don't get that. They get like, oh, hey, like, serious. And me, I don't know. People just, like, laugh and, you know, want to give me a hug. It's all right.
You're very huggable.
All right.
So if I want to join your gym, where do I go?
4510 West Hacienda, Hacienda in Arville. 702-336-7443. And we're brand new, man. So just got classes at 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. As we grow, I'm going to add morning classes, 11 a.m. Saturday. And it's fun. It's the name of the game is, like, to have come in here, learn, get in great shape. But you're not trying. You're not obsessing on your body and doing boring stuff. You're learning and having fun. And no assholes, you know. Bullies get kicked out. And everyone in my gym, everyone knows how to train with everyone. That's how you get good. You work with all ranks. You have control when you go with the low. You can roll with girls or with kids and things like that. You know how to go with people you can go harder with. And that's a big part of it. That's a big part of what I hear from people coming to the gym. It's like, man, you know, they go to these other gyms and they're a little too serious. They got guys in there trying to kill them. And there's too many people in there to really keep tabs on who's being an asshole. And they kind of get lost in the shuffle. So. And my gym, nice, tight little family unit, and it's fun, man. No assholes, no bullies. No sitting in your car being like, fuck, I don't want to go in today because so-and-so's going to show up and he's going to beat my ass. None of that. But check it out, American Psych is fitness and martial arts, and it's inside Silver Wolf 360, and we're also partner up with Fight Zone, so we're going to put that name on there too, and they're that new boxing league that's going to be boxing in a cage. So yeah,
I love it. Well,
I'm figuring everything out right now, but yeah, we got the gym open, classes going on, so come on, train, have fun.
Well, thank you, Stefan. I will talk to you soon. You're the best, brother.
All right, Adam, love you, brother.
Love you too, man. Take care.
Peace.
Traps, sons, and traps, sons, and traps, traps, sons, and trap, don't some trap, don't some trap. Түүний сонс тө хөвч юм дур булаа. Даа дэс дуутан дур булаа бууруулаа.